to Washington, D.C., and Jerry Bodlander.
Good morning, Jerry.
Good morning, gentlemen. Happy Monday.
Well, yeah. Thank you. Well, I think the folks in L.A. probably aren't feeling very good about this, though.
Boy, these scenes from L.A. are, you know, there's so many adjectives you could use. They're troubling. They're startling. But, you know, in a way, this is the fight that President Trump has been waiting for. You know, he vowed to press ahead with immigration sweeps in all cities across the country. And let's face it, California is as blue as it gets. And so it really isn't a surprise that, you know, he is taking the steps he's taking, telling the National Guard to go in, even though that's normally the purview of the governor, who now says he will sue because the president bringing in the National Guard, you know, in his eyes is making things worse rather than better. But certainly the, you know, the violence in the streets helps the, you know, the president's argument, if you will, that there are thousands of people who are not in this country legally, who are willing to engage in violence at a moment's notice.
Hmm. Now, as far as this violent behavior, did it precede the National Guard being called out? Because I was out of the loop over the weekend.
Well, you know, that's one of those things where, you know, certainly you had demonstrations and protests. There's no question about that. And certainly when that happens, there is usually, you know, some kind of violence. But the problem is you can define violence as one person throwing a rock against police. And you know, you can draw the parallel there to, you know, how do you call that violence? That's one person. Certainly there were instances, and, you know, cars were burned and that kind of thing. And so it gave the administration the opening, if you will, to say, listen, things are getting out of hand with folks who are in the country here illegally. You know, certainly there's a political aspect to it because Republicans have been very effective in recent years in taking Democrats to illegal immigration. And, you know, being able to say they stand for law and order while Democrats support folks who do not support that. And so, you know, you had this situation where the National Guard was called in, where the president went around the California governor. And, you know, the California governor basically said, listen, that's making things worse, not better. Now, you know, it's very, very early in the morning in L.A. right now, and you know, I don't know whether there will be a fourth day of violence, but certainly there are, you know, National Guard troops on the ground. You know, from what I understand, there are a lot of very, very peaceful protests as well. Certainly the violence is what catches everybody's eyes, and certainly what captures the attention of the TV cameras. And so we're going to have to see how it plays out, but certainly it doesn't help that the president was writing on social media that L.A. is being invaded and occupied, and the key word was by insurrectionists. And, you know, that's a key word because that opens up some legal aspects if he wants to use them, where he can, you know, invoke the 1807 Insurrection Act. We're going back, you know, 220 years, basically, which allows the president to deploy the military if he believes they're needed on the streets. And, you know, that's a step that raises all sorts of legal issues if we were to go that far. Certainly there are legal issues now because the National Guard, as I said, is usually the purview of the governor. And the governor says, listen, I didn't call them out. The president's inflaming the situation by having them on the streets. And so, you know, there's going to be certainly legalities involved here. There's no question about that. And we just sort of have to see how today plays out and what next steps are taken by each side.
And of course, bringing in the National Guard and nationalizing the National Guard, which they can do, that raises the question of what happened on January 6th when the National Guard couldn't get there to stop the, you know, the attack on the Capitol.
You know, there's a that's partly because you had a crazy situation where you have a mayor of D.C. and, you know, technically it gets involved with who has control over the National Guard in D.C. just because it's not a state where the governor would come into play. But, yeah, there's an, you know, the whole question of the National Guard is a huge question. And certainly, you know, there are some folks who will note that with these demonstrations, the president moved very, very quickly to bring the National Guard in and use the word insurrection when many call January 6th an insurrection, and yet he has pardoned just about everybody who's been involved with that. And so that raises the question on the parts of many, many folks as to whether or not there's a two-tier system that's coming into play, that, you know, insurrectionists who may support the president really can perhaps expect to be pardoned, or at least won't be come down on as hard by the federal government, the local government, the Justice Department, while other folks who perhaps don't support the president and are very, very outspoken in their opposition to not only policies but his actions, you know, get down on very, very hard and very, very quickly.
Okay, now I noticed that initially the guard assembled and parked vehicles at a federal building in downtown L.A., and we've seen that before used as a justification to protect federal property. But did they stay there, or they got called out to a different area?
Well, you know, they when you have 2,000 troops, it's kind of, and their vehicles and everything, it's kind of hard to keep yeah. them in one particular area. And certainly, you know, you can easily argue we have to protect federal property. You know, the question becomes, and I'm not that familiar with L.A., I have to admit, you know, whether or not the demonstrations were in and around those federal government buildings. Certainly, if they were anywhere else, I dare say the National Guard would go wherever they were needed to quell the violence and bring order to the streets. And so, you know, a lot of times the argument is made, oh, we've got to protect federal property. And certainly it's a legitimate contention. But whether or not those demonstrations were near those areas, you know, remains to be seen, because L.A. is a huge, huge area. And certainly, you know, you want to protect federal property, but there were also protests that are peaceful, not only in L.A., but, you know, other parts of the state. Certainly there were, I think there was some trouble overnight in San Francisco as well, but then read that there were going to be, you know, what are planned to be peaceful protests in Sacramento. So, you know, 2,000 people or 2,000 National Guard would have serious problems covering those three areas, because they are, you know, L.A. is 400 and some odd miles from San Francisco, and, you know, Sacramento is inland. And so, you know, you could get stretched pretty thin very, very quickly.
Now, was a union involved in all this? It seems to me that's how it all started, the Service Employees International Union.
Well, you know, certainly one would have to assume that if the folks who are members of the union are in the U.S. legally, I'm going to guess, I'm going to go out on a limb here and say, they either know some people who are in the U.S. illegally, or you have, or have family members who are in the U.S. illegally. And so then, you know, these immigration sweeps that the president is promising in cities across the country hit home, and certainly that would be something that, you know, the union would be concerned about. And certainly, I'm again go out on a limb and say I'm going to be pretty confident that there are employers who, you know, kind of looked the other way because they needed the help and brought in folks who are not here legally, who do, you know, the job for them very, very well and may even have been with them for years and years and years. I mean, there's a story from Missouri, a woman who overstayed her visa, been in the U.S., you know, more than 20 years, who was hauled away by ICE. And the town that voted for the president, you know, I think it was 4-1, was in an uproar because, you know, this woman's a part of the community. She works at the local diner. Her kids go to the high school. Everybody knows her, you know. And so it's a situation where, you know, you asked about the union, but it transcends, you know, union membership and really crosses all boundaries you know, both job-wise and income-wise.
Jerry, let's move on to the travel ban, which is in effect now.
It is. The travel ban kicked in today. It bans travel to the U.S. by citizens from, mostly African and Middle Eastern countries. We should point out that if people had visas, they should be able to come to the U.S. But what's happening is the visa requirements that you have to meet if you need a new visa, they're really, really going to narrow, what you can qualify under. And so that, in effect, makes it a ban. And so it's going to impact tons of folks. Certainly, Haiti's on the list, and there are a lot of people who are trying to flee the violence there, who have relatives here, who now suddenly realize, wow, my relative may not be able to make it. And, you've got Afghans who've come to the U.S. as refugees who are hoping to get family members out from under the thumb of the Taliban in Afghanistan. Certainly restaurants in the U.S. Are probably trying to get some workers to come here with a visa. And so tons of folks are going to be impacted. The interesting aspect is that this ban appears to be worded in a different way than the ban that the president imposed during his first term. And so the focus this time, is on the visa process, which, I haven't dealt with. I'm born here. I don't have to worry about it. But from what I understand, can be very, very cumbersome. And if English is not your first language, or even if it is, can be really involved and you really need help to deal with. And certainly you get the feeling that if there's any small mistake on these visa applications, that, the U.S. government is now just going to, say that's not going to work and you're not getting in.
And what about the big, beautiful bill?
Ah, yes, the big, beautiful bill, which, in theory, they would like to get done before the July 4th deadline. But, we just sort of have to see if that's even feasible. You've got the Senate Majority Leader John Thune is breaking it up into, sort of pieces to try to get folks to work on it, to come up with a way to, make it more palatable. But, it doesn't help that Elon Musk, even though he and the president are on the outs, even though he, just called it a mountain of disgusting pork, if memory serves, there are all sorts of areas that have to be dealt with. You've got the spending reductions for Medicaid. You've got cuts in the SNAP program. You've got a lot of senators who want more steps to reduce the deficit, but they also don't want to, cut Medicaid. And so they have to find, a balance, and that takes time. And, the interesting aspect, of course, is that this $40,000 cap on state and local taxes, which is something that, made it through the House because you had a handful of Republicans from blue states who said, listen, if that's not in there, you don't get our votes. They're basically saying the same thing to their Senate colleagues, that if you change that, even if you water it down, you're not going to get our votes on this side. And then the whole thing, again, fails. So, nothing is final until everything is final is a famous phrase here in D.C. And so it's going to take some time to smooth out, a lot of the rough edges. And whether or not this July 4th deadline can be met in the Senate is really, really up in the air right now. There are folks who just don't see it happening.
Jerry, as always, we appreciate your great reporting. And thank you for drilling down for us this morning.
Thanks for having me. Have a wonderful Monday.